What would you do with your life if you knew you couldn't fail? If you had all the money, all the time, all the knowledge, all the resources that you needed, what would you do with your life if you simply knew that anything was possible for you? My name is Christina Carlson, founder of global Swedish design and inspiration brand Dream Life and author of the book Your Dream Life Starts Here. And I love exploring these sorts of questions to inspire people like you to chase your own dream life, whatever that means for you. Many years ago, I wrote down a dream on paper that would one day bring Swedish design to the world and create beautiful, inspiring, and meaningful products that would bring sparks of joy into the everyday lives of millions. Now that I have achieved that dream, I want to leverage everything I've learned to help you dream big and to create a global movement to inspire 101 million people to transform their lives and transform the world in return. Each episode will dive deep into the power of dreaming and share real insights and practical ideas that you can use immediately to build a dream life of your own, whatever that means for you. Hi there and welcome back to another episode. I'm super excited today because today's guest is just brilliant and you will get so much out of this episode. It's like a mini training. Today's guest is Joe Parnay, and Joe is an expert in human behavior, degree qualified in psychology and sociology. He has been working in the field since 2006, working with a range of private clients through to larger corporate organizations, specializing in emotional fitness. His clients have ranged from multinational corporate groups through to more intimate personal groups. Joe is the creator of the Emotional Fitness Formula, an online certification training program for organizations and individuals alike. Joe is also the coach's coach, and in the last 16 years, he has trained in excess of 7,000 behavioral mindset coaches working in the field today. He is also a seven-time marathoner. That is pretty impressive and very inspiring. I can't wait for you to listen to this super inspiring conversation. And I'm also super excited and grateful that Joe is going to be our superstar speaker in the Dream Life Coaching Program in May, because our theme is self-doubt. And self-doubt is the number one dream life killer. And I want everyone to have all the tools they need to deal with self-doubt so it doesn't stop you from living your dream life. If you want to join us, just go to dreamlifestartshere.com. And if you listen to this at a later stage, we record all our superstar guests in the Dream Life Coaching Program, so you can join anytime and still get access to it. Let's get started. Joe, welcome to my podcast. I can't tell you how excited I am. It feels a little bit like Christmas morning to me.
Thanks, Christina. No, it's so exciting to be here too. So I think we're both like, I was going to say like two little pigs in poo, but that's not really the best analogy I can think of right now. But no, very exciting. Thank you. And it's an absolute honor to be here.
Thank you. So we got listeners from all over the world, which always fascinates me. So not everyone would have heard of you perhaps from the other side of the world. So I would love for you to share a little bit about your journey. But before you do that, I want to ask one question that I ask everyone. And that is, did you have a dream as a child? Was it something you wanted to do or become or achieve?
Well, I was really a late bloomer. So I had no idea, you know, when I was a teenager going into my 20s, I didn't really discover personal development until I was 28 years old. So real late bloomer, slow to grow. And then when I was 28, so that was back in 1998, I was working for a family business, not my family business, but a family business where the owners were heavily into personal development. And they actually had a coach, mentor, trainer, fellow who they subscribed to. And so we'd go to his events and got introduced to, you know, books by people like Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy and all these wonderful people, Jim Rowan, and I started getting inspired. It's like, oh my God, what is this world of personal development? And And what happened was, to answer your question about having a dream, I was advised to keep journals. You know, when you go to these events, keep a journal of your own personal notes and you start building, adding to your library, your own personal experiences written down of different trainings and events that you go to, and perhaps, you know, writing down some key learnings from a book that I would have read. And in one of my journals, which I don't have handy right now within my reach, it's in my library in the other room, but I wrote, what I do is teach people life stuff, and teaching people life stuff is what I, you know, that's my career. That'll be my thing. And I had no idea what that meant. Life coaching wasn't even in my realm of awareness. I didn't even know it existed. And in 1998, it was like virtually unknown here in Australia. And the reason why I wrote that was because our trainer, coach, mentor at the time said, you know, if you want to realize a dream, it's got to start with it being written down. Yeah, and I've got this written. I should have brought the journal here with me for this interview. And yeah, I've got it written, highlighted, and it literally says, it's just four or five lines that says that what I do for a living is teach people about life stuff. And that was literally the language of something like life stuff. So I didn't even have the proper description of what it is that I do. And then, you know, 7 years later after that, I started my coaching and training business in 2006. And so that was the beginning of the dream, I guess.
Oh, I just love that. I didn't know that, of course. And there's just something really powerful. I always inspire my dreaming community to write down their dreams because it's just so powerful. So I love you sharing that. So thank you so much. Well, I don't know where to start. After the whole day workshop that I did with you, it was so amazing. It was so inspiring. It was so insightful. I learned so much, and I have had a lot of laughs as well, which I love. So I think I love your sense of humor. But since that day, I have shared with a lot of my friends about emotional fitness. And every time I say those words together, emotional fitness, everyone is very intrigued what that means. So could you start by explaining to our listeners what emotional fitness really is?
Yeah, so the emotional fitness formula is like a culmination of the last 17 years of my work. And in essence, the core purpose of it is to help people's relationship with uncertainty massively improve. How we relate to uncertainty, I think it's one of the most important relationships, or one of the most important psychological relationships that we have, because when our relationship with uncertainty evolves and becomes more resourceful and more long-term, more adult-like, it has a significant positive ripple effect on how it is that we handle the guaranteed pressures, challenges, surprises, disappointments, and everything under the sun that life and being in our own businesses or just living brings. So in essence, it's about, yeah, how you can improve your relationship with uncertainty. What it's not, it's not about saying to you, oh, you know, by becoming emotionally fit, it means you can handle uncertainty. The uncertainty becomes easier. It doesn't make uncertainty easier. It just makes you more effective at navigating it. So you don't get impacted by it through potential anxiety issues or depression issues or, you know, other emotional issues.
I love that, because obviously I've gone through a little bit of uncertainty myself, to say the least. And something that, you know, when you talked about that during your workshop, that really resonated with me. So how can we improve our relationship with uncertainty?
So emotional fitness, the framework has five key focus areas, and all of these five key focus areas contribute massively to how we can improve our relationship with uncertainty. So the first focus area is identity. So identity is simply how it is that we've chosen to define ourselves, or in other words, what have we allowed ourselves to be defined by? So for example, if I define myself by the results I'm getting in my career or in my business or in my relationships, if my definition of myself is wrapped around results in every part of my life, then that makes me very susceptible to anxiety and potential depression and potential emotional issues if any of those, what we call vehicles, get threatened. So a vehicle in human behavior is like relationships, for example, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a professional relationship or a client, all of these are vehicles for us to express who we are. So, and our career is a vehicle as well. So if I'm defined by my career and then I have a terrible incident happened in my career where maybe, you know, like a lot of people, COVID shut them down. And you know this extremely well, Christina, that, you know, with the issues beyond our control, our business, you know, some people's businesses got shut down. If my identity was wrapped up in that, I'm going to have an identity crisis. So with emotional fitness, what we do is we get to learn how to navigate through the fundamental identity stages and phases so we don't define ourselves by results anymore. We can start defining ourselves by other things, defining ourselves by our legacy, defining ourselves by our spirit, defining ourselves by our soul, depending, of course, on, you know, what one believes. And so by shifting and evolving and moving with our definition of identity, it's less likely that we'll get caught up in getting significantly emotionally impacted by something that's really awful to deal with, like the end of something, like the end of a relationship, the end of a business, the end of something. So the identity is really, really powerful because it's the most significant force in the human condition. And the reason why that is true is because we will do anything to remain consistent with how it is that we perceive ourselves. And there's a thing called cognitive dissonance in psychology that's been known for a long time. And cognitive dissonance is when our actions or our behavior is not in alignment to our identity or to our values or to our belief system. And if we experience ourselves acting in a way that's completely inconsistent with who we think we are, we experience very awful feelings. We experience unbalance. We experience the opposite of peace. We just don't feel good. And in that space, we can't operate well. We can't make decisions clearly. So to avoid cognitive dissonance, which is what all of us are doing unconsciously, we want to act and behave in alignment to something. And if it's an alignment to me being defined by my career, well, that might make me feel good for a while, but I'm vulnerable to or susceptible to, if anything happens to my career, my results in my career, my identity will go with it. And if my identity goes away with it, I'm in trouble because now who am I? What am I? What am I all about? And so that makes navigating anything in life extremely difficult. And then you've got the second core focus area, which is our life stage, which is the journey that we're all on. So all of us, of course, are on individual journeys, unique journeys, but all of us from a pattern perspective are on the same journey. We're on the journey from ambition to meaning, a journey of moving away from egocentricity and moving toward living more in a heart-centric way. And depending on what stage of the journey that we're at, that's going to have an impact also on how it is that we navigate uncertainty. And then the third core focus area is values. And of course, in emotional fitness, we define a value as our emotional compass. And our emotional compass is designed to help us realize our deepest desires. So in other words, for example, if one of my values is health and vitality, which it is, it's my number one value, then I will do everything. My emotional compass will direct me toward doing what I need to do, eat what I need to eat, behave the way I need to behave, think the way I need to think, focus on what I need to focus on in order to feel good. And so your emotional compass guides you in the direction of what is important to you. And if we violate that emotional compass, we feel emotionally unsettled, to say the very least. We feel emotionally unwell. We feel emotionally off kilter, off center. We can't function when that happens. But if we're following and remaining loyal to our emotional compass, then you're living a life of psychological clarity. And psychological clarity is what helps us navigate uncertainty. So values, understanding our emotional compass is really important. And what most people don't realize is that your emotional compass exists within you. Our values are to be discovered. They are already present within us. Reading books about values is useful in that it helps us. The book points us in the right direction, but you're not going to get your values from out there. You're going to discover your values from within. And that's really, really important. And then you've got the fourth part of emotional fitness, which is emotional flexibility. And this is where we begin to realize emotions don't respond to facts. Emotions only respond to our interpretation of the facts. And when we realize that it's within our power of how we manufacture and fabricate our emotions, well, if we know that and we know how we are doing that, we can then change the way that we feel about something based on what you learn about emotional flexibility. And that helps us navigate uncertainty. And then the fifth and final part of the emotional fitness philosophy is perspective. You know, we need to have a clean, healthy perspective. Because when we get caught up in the everyday dramas of life and business and everything else, whether it's, you know, daily or weekly or monthly, you know, how often have we been told, hey, listen, you've got to get things into perspective here. Well, this is where we need to have a perspective that we can lean on. And my definition of a clean perspective is a perspective that gives us instant access to gratitude and appreciation. And when we've got access to gratitude and appreciation in a heartbeat, it massively transforms how we can rely on our perspective to navigate through daily and weekly dramas. So this is a very long answer to a very short question.
I love it. I love it. I heard this before, so I've been thinking a lot since I learned this from you, and I kind of so wish that I met you before I went through, you know, losing Kiki K. Yeah, but I managed it really well without the framework. But I use a lot of this, but you know, in a, obviously not in your framework, but identity I can so relate to, because you know, Kiki K is my nickname, and you know, even like when the business that currently owns Kiki K, you know, sent me a legal letter that I had to put take away Kiki K from my Instagram handle, I was like, that's me. And it's just like, it was just, but anyway, it was like identity. I could so relate to that. And also, you know, the journey and values, like I kept my values through the whole thing. I could have easily just thrown them out the window and be super angry. And, you know, and certainly had a lot of that, of course, as well. But in the end, I was like, I'm just going to remain true to my values and be emotional flexible. And then perspective is, I think, the one that really, really helped me a lot. And that was with thinking, you know, things could be so much worse, as I've shared to you offline, that, you know, a couple of friends that passed away, and I know that they will do anything just to be here to deal with my issues. And then, because this all happened through COVID, it was so many people who lost, you know, loved ones and couldn't even be there. And so I just put everything into perspective. And funnily enough, I got quite a lot of criticism from being positive in the way that I dealt with it, because I think people felt like, you know, I was just brushing it off. I certainly was. And it was two really difficult years. And, you know, there were days where I just thought, you know, how am I going to get through this? But a lot of the time I just thought, gosh, you know, lucky me to be. I have a photo of my friend who passed away in cancer, and I saw him every day, and I just thought, gosh, lucky me to be here. So obviously I had a lot of tools to kind of rely on that I learned throughout my values of personal growth and personal development throughout many, many years. But thank you for sharing that, because I think that would be so helpful for so many people who are going through a challenging time right now.
Well, I tell you, Christina, one of the things that when we were just chatting away before we realized, hey, we better get this podcast going. It was so good. It was so fun. But something I realized or became aware of as you were sharing a little bit into your story and what you've experienced over the last few years is that what I noticed about what you shared was that you unconsciously, or maybe it was conscious, I'm not really sure, but one of the things that I love sharing with people is the power of something as simple as balancing our core driving needs of certainty and uncertainty, as you heard me explain in the training that you came to the other week. And what I realized is that with yourself, you know, something that you did really well was, you know, you said to me that you kept up a lot of the activities that mattered to you, your walking, which matters to you a lot, your journaling, which matters to you a lot, and lots of other, I'm sure there were lots of other activities that we didn't have time to explore that you kept on doing. And this is a really, really crucial message in that whether we are aware of it or whether we're not, psychologically or energetically, we're continually looking for establishing an equilibrium between certainty and uncertainty. And certainty can present itself and can build that in different ways. Having a hobby that we love, a ritual that we enjoy. And these are hobbies and rituals that we do on a consistent basis. You know, we're talking about weekly activities done multiple times a week, whether it is walking or physical movement or creativity or playing music or being an artist or whatever it might be, having rituals that we can rely on that, you know, pretty much tells us energetically what part of the week that we're in. You know, Wednesdays I normally do X, and on Fridays I'll do Y, and on Mondays I'll do this. So there's rituals that frame our week. That gives us certainty. Having people, all you need is one person. If you've got two, you're extremely lucky. But one or two people who you can lean on, you can talk about anything with. Like in your case, Christine, I would imagine that would be, you know, your partner. For me, it would be my wife. And These are people that we can sit and speak completely unfiltered, unedited, no judgment, and just speak your mind. These things are important. So when you've got a relationship that you can be unfiltered and unedited with, and there's genuine love and genuine care and genuine unconditional care, combined with rituals every week, combined with a hobby that sings to your soul that you've still got access to, whether it's physical, musical, etc., doing that, that helps osmotically, psychologically balance the certainty and uncertainty scale. And so when I started my business back in 06, I had never done anything like this in my life. I had been an employee all of my life. And so to go from consistency of on the 13th of every month, I'll get paid this much, my superannuation gets paid for, my holiday gets paid for, you know, everything's automated financially when you're on salary, everything's predictable. From that to, holy crap, I don't even know where the next dollar's coming from. Like, when's the next client going to appear? You know, what's going to happen when I go to that networking event? Like, all this uncertainty. What helped me navigate through that was similar to yourself, is I had my running hobby. So I was part of a running community. I loved running half marathons, and I did a few marathons, training for those, preparing for those. That gave me certainty and comfort and security and familiarity. And when we've got that need established, we can handle more of the unknown. Where we run into trouble is when the scale is unbalanced. It's when we've got uncertainty through the roof and very little certainty going on because we've dumped our rituals, we've dumped our walks, we've dumped our hobbies because, oh, no, I've got... And this is the mistake a lot of people make, Christina, where they go, no, I've got to deal with this issue right now. I've got to deal with this crisis. So, no, I don't have time to walk and play the guitar and do all these things. This is a psychological error because by actually keeping on those things that make you feel good, it reestablishes the equilibrium so you can more effectively handle the uncertainty that's there. Whereas if all you're doing is trying to prioritize everything that is dealing with that uncertainty and not taking care of all of these other things I've just shared, it's unsustainable. And this is where people burn out. This is where people get depressed. This is where people get anxiety. This is where people's bodies begin to fall apart. And this is where issues begin to really happen. And then, of course, you've got some people who've got the opposite problem, where their life is full of certainty and they've got no uncertainty. There's very little challenge. They've hidden themselves from life. They've over-padded, over-protected. And so now we've got this person that has no challenge, no uncertainty, no growth, no variety, no adventure, none of that. And everything is predictable and certain. Well, this person's going to suffer from chronic boredom. And we know that chronic boredom is one of the many pathways that leads to depression. And so therefore, this equilibrium, this balance between these two core drivers is crucial when it comes to our emotional fitness and well-being.
Gosh, I love this because I often get the question how I manage not to get burnt out. You know, when you do a startup and, you know, I was really young and I could definitely work a lot because I had no children and I could live really cheaply and I could just basically work 24/7 and I loved it. So I did. But I always balance with wellness and health and fitness and not in an extreme way in any way, but just always every single day walking, meditation, journaling, all that kind of stuff. And for me, it was just like part of it. And I got these questions all the time. How did you not get burnt out? How did you manage to keep that work balance? And I was like, you know, it's just really, really the simple stuff. And also, I think it does really help when you do something you love so much. And that's certainly what I did back then and what I do today, actually even more now because I'm back in control and I know exactly what my new business, you know, will be like. And it's one thing that I feel so passionate. I spoke about before we started recording that I'm now going to start, and I haven't actually spoken about this, but I will talk about it anyway, because who knows if there's someone listening out there who this could be helpful to, but I am going to start a mastermind for female entrepreneurs because I feel like I have so much that I can share in terms of keeping that work-life balance, because it's such a shame to see people who are so talented and so passionate about their business and then they suffer from burnout or depression and all those kind of things that you just spoke about. And just keeping some simple things, like for me, that's walking, journaling, meditating, eating well, and, you know, seeing friends. And as you mentioned before, having a person, so I obviously had my partner, we went through the same thing, but that was also a burden to kind of sometimes put all that on him because he was dealing that himself. So I actually had a friend that I called every single day And we laugh, actually it was multiple times. And because she was walking and I was walking, she's in Sydney and I'm in Melbourne. It's Anna Curran, who's been on my podcast as well. She's an interior designer, has nothing to do with these kind of topics, but we spoke every single day at least once. And that was so helpful because I felt like if I spoke to my partner, he had the same problem. So kind of almost multiple. So I obviously we spoke a lot about it, but it was so good to have someone who I felt like it wasn't a burden. And I think that's really helpful when you're going through a challenging time, sometimes because that partner lives with that as well. It's difficult sometimes to know how much you can actually burden them if they're going through the same thing, if that makes sense.
Look, absolutely. And the other thing that contributes to the situation with, you know, when we're sharing a burden with a partner is also having an awareness of how they are psychologically constructed, because that's a fancy way of saying, well, what kind of personality do they have? As you recall, Christina, when at that one day, the masterclass training you came to, we spent a bit of time talking about different types of personalities and how some personalities are past assurance-based thinkers and other personalities are more future assurance-based thinker. And you're the kind of person who's more future assurance-based thinking, which means that when you're making decisions and when you're making a decision whether you invest time, energy, effort, spirit, or money into anything, it's in the context of where it's taking you. And you spend very little time dwelling on the past. Like, there's nothing wrong, as I say, there's nothing wrong with looking at the past, but some people stare at the past and that's all they do. And then you've got other people who are more past assurance based thinkers, where they need more time to process the current challenge. The danger that they face, or the risk they face, is that they spend too much time in reflection mode, you know, over something that happened in the past that now no longer can be changed. You know, the only way that thing in the past is going to affect you today is if you keep staring at it, because as we know, you know, whatever we focus on expands in our experience. And so that's another key component of understanding our emotional fitness and the structure of ourselves. And, you know, that psychological element of our identity is having an appreciation of our partners and how they think differently to us. To give you a classic example, Christina, I mean, we've had our own little version of uncertainty here, nothing compared to what you went through with Kiki K. Like, it's like 10%, 5%, 1% of what you went through. But, you know, we've been going through a journey here renovating our house. So that's why you can't compare it, renovating a house versus losing a business. You can't really compare the two. But on a psychological level, there are many parallels, because we spent double the amount of money than what we anticipated for a start. We didn't go over by 30%. We went over by 50%, maybe even more than that. I haven't even added it all up yet. Part of me doesn't want to know.
I hear you.
But whenever there was multiple chunks of uncertainty, in other words, decisions needed to be made in that hour, because if we didn't make a decision about something, that could have a ripple effect, or would have a ripple effect in holding up this, this, and this, which would mean costing this, this, and this. So, or sometimes some of these decisions could financially impact us significantly if we didn't make those decisions quickly and correctly. So understanding Silvana, my wife, understanding her construct, her profile in terms of how she thinks, she can only take one chunk of uncertainty at any given time. Whereas my personality, and that's a past assurance-based kind of person, whereas I'm more future assurance-based person, I'm assuming like yourself, where if I needed to know about four different things that were going on that day that we needed to make decisions on, for me it was like, yeah, tell me, I want to know all of the bits that I need to know. And I would embrace all of the little uncertainty chunks of news to deal with it, so we could just, because I'd like to go to bed at night in peace. So I want to take care of all the little mini chunks of uncertainty, so I know that I've done everything I can today. And then when we go to bed, we go to sleep, we go unconscious, everything resets, and the next morning you deal with the next challenge. Whereas Sylv, if I went to Sylv and I said, love, we've got this, this, and this, and this, and this, we've got to think about and do this, and then we've got to talk to Jack, and then we've got to talk to that person, she would just go into overwhelm. And in overwhelm, we don't have any clarity. We can't make decisions. So it's really important that we get to become very familiar with our own personality and how we're constructed, because more than likely for those of us like yourself, Christina, and myself, I mean, you know, Sylvan and I have been married for 26 years, and you really need to know your partner, because sometimes we can be our partner's worst enemy if we're trying to help them function the way that we function. And chances are that if you've been in a successful relationship for a long time, your partner will be different to you and how they see the world and how they make decisions and how they relate to uncertainty, it's going to be different. There's a high chance that that will be the case. The complementary energies of different styles of people, which is part of the reason why that marriage or that relationship functions so well. So that's another element of identity that's really important to become aware of.
Yeah, I had a big laugh when we learned about that because I have a very different style to my partner, but also to my team. And because I'm live in the future and I have big dreams and big visions, I sometimes forget that that I need to deliver it in a different way. I actually had that experience not that long ago. So we live and we learn, right?
Yes, we do. So it's such a beautiful thing. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about our thoughts and maybe share some helpful tips how we can deal with our thoughts and how we can stop being victims of our own thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So another way of expressing emotional fitness is not only is it a measure of the quality of our relationship with uncertainty, it's also, in essence, our relationship with uncertainty really is also measured by the quality of our relationship with our thoughts. What we need to understand, and this is something that can challenge, ironically, some people's thinking that, are listening to this wonderful conversation that we're having. And this is controversial to some people, and I'm just going to share it because this is seemingly accurate, and that is that our thoughts are not our thoughts. They feel like our thoughts. We experience them as our thoughts, but we are not the author of our thoughts. What they are is like, and this is going to go a little bit down a different kind of track, Christine. I'm sure, I know that you don't mind me going down the woo-woo path. I'm not sure how your listeners take the woo-woo path.
Oh, they will love it.
Okay. So in science, that's interesting. He said he's going to talk about woo-woo and he opens with the word science. This doesn't make sense to me. What's he doing? But this will make sense if we follow the path here. And that is that in science, they say that everything in the universe, and I want to stress the word everything, everything is energy. And energy is always moving. It never stays still. Energy is continually transforming from one form to another. The actual movement of the energy, in science, they call that a vibration. And the speed of the vibration is called a frequency. And then frequencies resonate with each other to create a relationship. So when we're listening to a radio station, whether it's on digitally or the old-fashioned way, we're tuning into the frequency of that particular radio station to listen to that particular style of music. And once we're tuned into that frequency is going the whole time. Like if I'm tuning into 104.9 Gold FM that plays 80s and 90s music, whether I'm tuned into it or whether I'm not, it's continually forecasting, programming that kind of music. And if I tune into it, I experience it. Our thoughts are frequency wavelengths. They literally have individual wavelengths that have a beginning, a peak, and an end. That's great, Joe, but how does that translate to everyday life? Well, who here has ever been angry? Right? I'm sure, have you ever been angry, Christina?
Sure have.
We've all done anger. My God. If you haven't done anger, you're lying. You're either lying or you're lying. So we've all done anger. And try holding on to anger for a whole day. You have to actually put effort into reconnecting to the frequency of it. In other words, it's a fancy way of saying we need to keep thinking about the thing that made us angry to stay angry. Like it takes effort. If we then allow it to just allow the frequency, the wavelength, just take its peak and then disappear. The only way that that wavelength is going to re-spark is if we start talking about that thing that made us angry again. But if we don't, the anger disappears. And so it's literally like waves coming in at the beach. They have their peak, they have their break, and then they disappear. Thoughts are exactly like that. And we are not the authors of those thoughts. We can cling on to thoughts. We can choose which thoughts to tune into. And then what happens is the moment we tune into that thought, we need to then make sense of it. We need to interpret it. And the meaning that we give that thought is what is producing the emotional experience. So emotions are fabricated because they are, Joe, how can you say that? Fabricated. I feel the way I feel. I know the way I feel. Yeah, the reason why we feel the way we feel is because it's an interpretation. It's an echo of an interpretation of something we've just experienced. So let me give you an example, which I shared at the train there, Christina. Pretend you and I, Christina, are walking down Hastings Street here in Noosa, and you're on the other side of the street. I'm on the opposite side, and I look across the street. Oh, there's my friend Christina. I wave to you, and you don't wave back. Now, in that moment, I'm going to interpret your inaction or you not waving back in any which – there's so many ways I can interpret that. I might interpret that as, oh, maybe she doesn't like me, right? And now that I've interpreted it like that, because of the meaning I have given what I've just experienced, I'm going to feel sad and rejected. Now, the sadness and rejection is a real experience, but it's been manufactured by our ego. It's been manufactured by our thoughts. It's been manufactured by, more accurately said, the meaning that we're giving those thoughts. So in that moment, if someone is emotionally fit and well, in that moment, we can catch ourselves out and ask ourselves more intelligent questions. So how do you know that she doesn't like you? What makes you say that? You've just completely made that up. Why would you say that? And we can start changing our interpretation of that moment right there. And so our thoughts come and go like wavelengths. And you and I, all of us, choose consciously, or in a lot of cases unconsciously, what thoughts we want to repeat to ourselves. Oh, I'm going to keep thinking about why I'm angry, you know, about this particular person and about this particular event. Well, if you keep repeating that, and you keep tuning into that particular station, if you want to tune into Anger FM, guess what sort of music Anger FM plays? Angry music. And you're going to feel angry forever unless you change the dial. So thoughts are experienced very, very real. And if I can go next level here, next level is, and this can be easily misunderstood what I'm going to share here, is that life is experienced on a personal level, but the solution to our problems are to be found at the impersonal level. What the heck does that even mean, man? What does that mean? Well, what it means is that the emotion of sadness and rejection because Christina didn't wave back to me from the other side of the street is experienced on a personal level. But the impersonal is where we remove ourselves from the actual experience and look at the mechanics of the mind. And the mechanics of the mind is, well, hold on, why are you feeling sad and rejected? Well, because she doesn't like me. Well, hold on, how do you know that she doesn't like you? I actually don't know that. So you've just made that up. Looks like I have. Well, what if you made up something different, like she just didn't see you? Well, I guess I'd feel kind of different. How different would you feel? I feel kind of indifferent and neutral. It wouldn't impact me. Well, that's right. How do you know that she doesn't like you? I don't. That's right. So what are the facts here? She just didn't see me. Okay. All of a sudden that changes my experience of you not seeing me on the other side of the street. Is this making sense so far?
Yeah, absolutely. But I have a question, and maybe you are going to cover it anyway. But so that's one thing then in terms of, so I could easily see how we can choose that. But there might be an experience where someone actually did something that really hurt you, whatever that is. So for example, the street I can completely understand, but if there's someone who's done something, you know, being dishonest or I'm curious about that because that's a harder, more in front of you, harder to choose a different frequency versus the street example.
Yeah, great question. I love it. So if someone has done something really awful towards you, and this is where there's about two or three different angles or responses I've got to that really, really good question, is that the first thing is this. And this is when I say the first thing, this is not in any particular order. I can't say three things at once. So I'm just going to go sort of one, two, three, but these aren't in any particular order. So first of all, a very, very challenging question that we can ask ourselves is, what role have I played in this experience? In other words, how have I contributed to this happening? Very tough question. And the initial response to that is, I haven't contributed to this. They're the dick. They're the asshole. She's the so-and-so. You can do that for the rest of your life and you're not going to get to any clarity. So that's first thing. Then as the emotional dust starts to settle, we can ask ourselves that question again. What was the role that I have played in contributing to this experience? Or how have I contributed to this experience? I can tell you with absolute deep certainty that we've played a role in this somehow. there's something in it somewhere. And without having a real situation and without having a real person with a real scenario, we aren't able to actually demonstrate that right now. But that these are valuable questions that are great to ask, especially when some time has passed and the emotional dust, as I say, has settled a little bit. That's the first thing. Second thing is this. Let's circle back to my comment a few minutes ago about life is experienced on the personal, but resolved on the impersonal. So if this is a pattern in your life, if this person doing this certain thing to us has happened on multiple occasions in my relationship, say, or in my, if I've been bullied many, many times in the work environment over the last 5 years, and every time I go to a new work environment, I seem to attract that kind of person and I get that experience. If it's showing up as a theme in your life, then the tough love here is that we're creating that experience. Because if that experience was based on fact that the bullies are there and that's how it is, all of us would be experiencing exactly the same thing as we move from workplace to workplace, relationship to relationship. But the fact is that we're not. We're all experiencing workplace and our relationships differently from each other. So what's the pattern there? What is it that we're doing that's creating this? And I don't want to sound all conceptual here, but this is how, what it is that we're aligning our frequency to the frequency of whether it's bullying frequency, traumatic frequency, or whatever frequency it is. And quite often, the person who experiences this on a repetitive basis, their level of self-respect, self-trust, and self-love is virtually non-existent. So I'll say that again. I'll say the opposite. I've never found someone who has got high levels of self-trust, high levels of self-respect, and high levels of self-love that has been bullied in a work environment. I've never seen it. That's a strong statement. It's an accurate statement. And the reason why that's true is because the way I hold my body, the way I speak, the way my tone, I'm not talking about myself right now, I'm just speaking as an example, the way I walk into a room, the way I relate to people, the way I respect people, the way I treat people, the courtesy, the kindness, the compassion, understanding, the appreciation of self expressed through others, I don't attract the frequency of bully. I attract the frequency of kind, care, compassion, love, appreciation, respect. So that's great, Joe. So how does this help me? It helps you because the greatest gift you can give yourself is to build self-respect. It's to build self-trust. It's to build self-love. Because when we've got self-respect levels, self-trust levels, and self-love levels at the levels that they need to be, we simply do not attract this kind of person that, because it's uncanny how a bully can pick a mile away a victim. And I'm telling you now, I can say this, as I said, with the most profound of certainty. That person's got 0 out of 10 levels of self-respect, self-trust, and self-love. So the long game here is, how do you cut the pattern? How do you stop it from repeating itself? Well, it's not by continually changing relationships and continually swinging from workplace to workplace. It's by allowing yourself the gift of self-trust and self-respect. Well, that sounds great, Joe. So how do you do that? How does that begin? The way that begins is that it might start that, I'll give you a classic example, Christina. Let's just say I'm a person who has got, you know, 1 out of 10, 0 out of 10 scores on those three elements of self-trust, self-respect, and self-love. I might make a conscious decision that I need to start growing in this part of my life. It's really, really important that I do this so I can create boundaries, so I can be more commercially, personally, spiritually, emotionally attractive to others, because I can bring genuine certainty into situations by building these three things. So how do I do this? Well, I might go, okay, well, I've made a decision. It starts with a decision. So this, the word decide means to cut off from the past, right? The word CIDE means to kill, to cut off. Insecticide is to kill the insect. The insecticide is to kill. So decide is to cut off the past, kill the past. So how do we do that? Well, I might make a promise to myself that I'm going to walk for 20 minutes every morning around this block. In the morning when I wake up, regardless of the weather, regardless of my mood, regardless of my emotion, regardless of anything, I'm going to do this no matter what. So why is that important? Our unconscious mind is continually observing who we're being. It's continually observing that part of us that we don't know, that we're not consciously aware of, is continually observing who we're being. So if I'm now walking 20 minutes a day, 7 days a week, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, and I'm doing this now week by week by week, I'm starting to treat myself very differently. I'm starting to prioritize myself over other things. No, it's really important. You know, the kids, I've got to get the kids ready for school in the morning. Well, I'm going to wake up an extra half hour early to fit in my 20-minute walk because I matter. And now I'm on the journey now of valuing myself as much as I value other people. And when I actually genuinely value myself as much as I value other people, self-respect is there, self-trust is there, and self-love is there. And in that space of being at that level of frequency, at that level of speed of vibration, the bully ain't going to come to me. They ain't coming. They simply disappear from my experience. Is this making sense so far, Christina?
Oh, I love it. Absolutely it does.
There's a third part. The third part is this, is to move on. So it's all of the above that I've just shared. And then to move on from this, as in when I say this, to move on from that traumatic experience or that awful experience that you may have had, is we need to practice the art of forgiveness. Now, I need to explain this because forgiveness is not what most people think. Most people think that asshole who did that to me back in 1995, I need to forgive him. Now, if I'm going to speak with my feet on the ground as an everyday human being who is also growing and full of vulnerabilities and foibles and fears and love and compassion and everything under the sun, I don't know about you, but if someone did something really, really, really awful to me or to my sons or to my wife, I'm not at Christ consciousness levels of thinking yet. I'm not of that level of Buddha where I can forgive them. So that's not very useful, Joe. How am I supposed to let go of them if I can't forgive them? Because you're not here to forgive the person. You're here to let go of the attachment to the feeling that that person gave you. I'll say that again. Forgiveness is letting go of the attachment to the feeling that that person gave me. So once I have let go of that feeling, that emotion that I felt because of that trauma, I have let go of that person. Should you go back to that person and confront them? Absolutely not, because this is where wisdom kicks in. As I said, the training, Christina, I think I said this at the training that you were in. I said, we've got to learn about the fires that we need to stay away from. If you want to re-engage with all of the trauma, go back and put all of the emotional ingredients together, including that person, and all of it will rush back, because all of these traumatic experiences are a series of intense anchors that produce certain feelings in us. So how do you heal? How do you recover from this? You stay away from it. It's a fire you stay away from. It's a person you just simply no longer see anymore. It's an event that you no longer revisit. And you practice the art of letting go of the attachment to the feeling of that situation. And now you've forgiven the situation. It's not about forgiving the person, unless you are at a level of consciousness that is like Jesus or the Buddha or, you know, any of these classic mystics, where you can be on a cross and say, forgive them for they not know what they're doing. I'm not at that level of thinking yet, and most of us aren't. So I'm trying to be as pragmatic as possible here with this approach. So there, and I want to say to your beautiful listeners, please forgive me if I'm going too deep or too heavy with this stuff. It's just, to me, it's not heavy. To me, it's just what it is, you know. This is how we approach life, you know, with this awareness.
And I think this is so good because we all have challenges. And, you know, I often talk about creating the dream life, and some people think the dream life is a perfect life. It's never a perfect life. There are always things happen. We have people that are out of our control, and we have, you know, events that happens without having the control to change that. So this has been so, so great for any challenges. So thank you so much.
No, you're welcome, Christina. If I can add something to what you just said there about dream life, just to clarify for people what a dream life, because dream life is the 2% of people's lives that we see on Instagram. You know, that's all bullshit. So the dream life is living a life of freedom. My definition of freedom is where you are living unconditionally aligned to your values through your professional and personal and spiritual life, When you are making money in a meaningful way, which is a fancy way of saying, I'm now making money in a way that's aligned to my integrity, to my values and what I'm about. I'm living my passion. I'm doing my thing. My relationships are aligned. I've got the right people around me. I can be myself freely without any concern. And I'm aligned to my spiritual values, whatever that means. That means different things to different people. That's freedom. That's the dream life. Not the plastic surface that you see on the social media platforms. It's the inner world. When your inner world is in alignment to everything, professional, personal, spiritual, emotional, you feel phenomenal. There's just this joy that's unspeakable.
Yeah. And, you know, I truly, truly live my dream life because when
I know I, even, you do, even, and that's why I love you.
but saying that, you know, I have a lot of challenges facing me every day. But it's when I connect with people like you and I create products that I know will be helpful and I have my coaching, I just love it. Like I and you know, people is I'll give you an example when I booked a free workshop on New Year's Day, because I'm one of those people who just I'm a morning person and I just love starting the year on a really inspiring way. So I just thought, I'm just going to do a free workshop. And my partner, he was like, because he often helps me with the chat and stuff. He was like, who will come at 10 a.m.? I said, there will be a few. There might not be thousands, but there will be a few crazy people like me who wants to start the year on a very great way. And I got up early and I went for a walk and I thought of everything that I was going to talk about. And then I made myself a coffee and I started a workshop. And I could not have done anything better way of starting the year. And it's funny how some people just like, why would you do that? Like, that's crazy. But when you live aligned to your values and you do what you love, that's why I'm so passionate about helping people live their dream life for whatever that is, because it's different for everyone. And so thank you for sharing the same way, because I truly believe that is the case. So thank you. I'm interested in a couple of more things, shorter questions. And that is, have you got a morning ritual?
It's not a rigid ritual. So there's rigid rituals, which means you follow something exactly the same every morning. I'm not like that, but I have every morning's different. So I know that, say this morning, today's at the time of this recording, it's Tuesday. I know that Tuesday 7:30 is drop off for my sons at school. And then 8 o'clock, I see my trainer religiously every Tuesday. I see a trainer twice a week and we do, you know, a specific session. You know, Mondays is a day of rest where I literally will go to Noosa Main Beach at 5:30 in the morning and have a dip in the ocean, which is just beyond words. And north-facing beach, you know, no sun in your eyes. It is just magic. And if my wife comes with me, it's an absolute bonus, which we've done a couple of times, which we just giggle in the water together. This is going to sound really mushy, but you know, we'll be floating in the water, you know, holding onto each other, looking back at the Noosa Surf Club where there's a digital clock and a temperature gauge on the wall. And there it says 5:35 a.m., 24 degrees, and we're in this water and we're just laughing our heads off going, this is ridiculous. So that's Monday mornings. And then I run 5 days a week and I've got two running communities that I'm part of. And Wednesdays and Fridays, I run with these particular groups of people, which are just beautiful people to be with. So me, it's not a daily ritual. It's a weekly framework, if you like, of where I know on Saturdays I do this, on Sundays I do that. And all of this is happening pretty much from 5 a.m., 5:30, 6 a.m., you know, 6 a.m. at the very, very latest. And the exception to that is that on Saturday mornings, I sometimes love, you know, once or twice a month, I love doing these things called park runs, and they're little 5K fun run events that are free events all around Australia and all around the world, in fact. And they start at 7 a.m. So 7 a.m. to me is like lunchtime. But, you know, it's fun. And if I can get my sons involved in any of those things, I'll do. So to answer your question, the short answer is yes. The longer answer is, yep, every week is kind of similar, but every day is different.
I love that. And I love asking it because everyone's morning ritual is different. And it's so inspiring to hear what everyone is doing, because you can take, for anyone's listening, can take whatever is resonating with you. So thank you for sharing that. The next question is a very difficult question for someone like you, I believe, and that is, have you got a favorite book? And when I ask that for someone who reads a lot, it's like, you know, asking who's your favorite child, which is impossible.
Well, I can tell you straight off the cuff, a book that massively changed my life, it was two books, but okay, so 25 years ago, I read Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. That changed my life. More recently, it'd be close to 10 years ago now, probably 8 years ago. It's the only book that I have read. I've lost count how many times I've read it, and it's starting to fall apart. And it's a book by a fellow called Dr. David R. Hawkins, and it's called The Eye of the Eye. So The Eye, E-Y-E, of the Eye, capital I. And it's a book about how to let go of ego, let go of thoughts, let go of who you think you are, and moving closer toward your true identity, which is the identity of spirit, soul, consciousness. It's that kind of thing. And it's a book that the first two or three times I read it, I actually got depressed reading it. When I say I got depressed, my ego got depressed, because when the ego is confronted with the truth, it often will produce different experiences within us to help us not face this new realization. Yeah, it was really heavy going there, but The Eye of the Eye by Dr. David R. Hawkins, if you know the old metaphor, if you are on an island, you can only take one book, that would be the book I would bring.
Thank you so much. The last question I have, knowing what you know now, what kind of advice would you give yourself, say, in your late teens? Or whenever you can choose whatever age you think is good to have that advice with your wisdom, in today's wisdom.
Here we go. These are very wise words, Christina. Are you ready?
Sure I am.
Get over yourself and have more fun.
There were so many things I loved about your workshop. I repeated that your comment that we have to all get over ourselves many times to my friends, and we all have a laugh. So quickly, how do we do get over ourselves and have more fun?
Take yourself lightly, not being so serious about everything all the time. You know, we can have a lot of fun and still remain focused. It's realizing that our life will never and has never been about us. And the more we make our lives about us, the more heavy our energy will be, the more miserable we'll be. But we are wired in humanity. We are wired to serve. We are wired to contribute. The more you make your life about other people and contributing to others, the more that life will take care of you. So getting over oneself is not being so self-focused when you walk into a room. If Joe or Christina walks into a room, not everyone's going to be thinking about Christina and Joe. I mean, they're going to be thinking about their own problems and their own this and that. You know, it's so getting over oneself is having fun, choosing the light side of life, realizing that life is too short to be serious, and that seeing the humor in ourselves, situations, the world, it just changes your perspective. But the core of it all, Christina, the actual core ingredient here with this, is to have an awareness that your life is not about you. It's about what you can do for it. And that's a significant psychological shift.
I love that. What a beautiful way of ending this super inspiring conversation. Joe, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your incredible wisdom. And it's just been so inspiring. And I know that I will get so much feedback on how much they will love this episode. So thank you.
Thank you, Christina. And, you know, if people want to dive into this kind of stuff more, they're welcome just to visit joeparnia.com.au. It's all there.
Beautiful. We'll link to all that, all your things on the show notes as well. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh my, I am so, so inspired now. And gosh, there were so many gold nuggets to implement in our lives. And I hope you are as inspired to take action as I am. I can't tell you how excited and grateful I am to have Joe joining us in the Dream Life Coaching Program in May to help us all deal with that self-doubt that comes with dreaming big. If you want to join us, just go to dreamlifestartshere.com. Wow, I think I need to do some journaling now and process all the things that he shared. I can't wait to hear what you got out of this episode. Please share that in your Dream Life podcast Facebook group. As always, I'll be back next week. Can't wait. I will see you then.